We're here on Daf Ayin Tes Amud Beis in Asocha Sa'umdin, about halfway down the Amud, Tana Rabbanan. Hasocher es hachamar lirkov aleha. So we're talking about the masker and the socher here in this case. We're talking about a chamar, and the purpose is to ride the chamar. And of course, as a means of transportation, the socher intends to take the chamar from place X and arrive at place Y, his destination. And the question is, in terms of the donkey being able to suffer a certain weight on its back, what are the parameters? What is the assumption from the maskir's point of view as to what weight the socher will place on the back of the donkey? The Brice establishes meniach aleha ksuso. He should, of course, be taking clothing along. He's going to arrive from place X to place Y, and there he'll need clothing. In addition to the clothing that obviously he needs for the ride itself, he'll need clothing for the place that he arrives at. And Tosus here has a slightly different girsa, and we have ksuso. Rabbeinu Chananel has keses. If you take a look at Tosus, Di Ramachos ksuso, in the name of Rabbeinu Chananel, keses, which means pillows. So he takes along small pillows for his head, as opposed to something called a car, which is a larger and heavier item. And then the Braisa says the following: Uliginuso is a jar that, of course, will carry liquids. Mizonos, and of course, we're talking about supplies, food that will keep him going. Shel osa haderech, that he'll need for the way, for the road. The assumption is that other provisions he will purchase at his destination at place Y. Mikan v'yelech, if the socher wants to add extra weight beyond that, is chamar me'akev olav. The chamar is the representative of the maskir. He's the one who's going to lead the donkey, drive the donkey, and he can prevent the socher from adding extra weight that could weigh down and weaken the animal and cause perhaps even its death. Now, the donkey driver himself, this chamar, he too has to take along some provisions, besides the weight that he's carrying on behalf of the socher, the renter. And the Braisa says, chamar meniach olav saorim viteven. Saorim, of course, is barley, and teven is straw. And these are certain foods that are necessary for the animal itself. Umizonosov shall also hayom. And the chamor has to eat, so he brings his food for that day. But mikanvielich socher meyakiv olav. Now the socher has right to say, don't overburden the animal with a heavier burden, because that's going to slow down the journey, and also the animal might die as a result of the extra burden. So that's how we divvy up the maximum capacity, volume, or weight that this animal could take. Hechi dami, the Gemara says, what's going on here? E tishchiach lemizvan. Now, if along the way there are stores where they could buy food, then chamar nami liakev. In other words, the chamar should be able to prevent the socher from taking more than one day's food. Because what are you saying? That he'll need food when he gets there. Well, why can't he buy food on the way? There is an availability of provisions to be purchased on the road. Let's say they're traveling out there in the wilderness, is socher nami lo liakev, then the socher himself also should allow the maskir, in this case the chamor representing the maskir, to add provisions for not just one day, but for the entire trip. Why does the Tana say that the socher can only load enough for the journey and the owner for one day? If there's nowhere along the line, then if this journey will take a week, we should allow the maskir or the chamor representing the maskir to add provisions for the entire journey. Amar Rav Papa lo tzrich, what's the case? Dishchiach lemitrach ulemizvan me'avna liavna. That enochinami, there are provisions to be purchased, but it's a tircha. It's an extra hassle to purchase them on a daily basis. And therefore we have to be a little bit more flexible with regard to the socher, allowing him to bring along and load the animal with more than one day's provisions. If you take a look at Rashi says, just one second, me'avno le'avno mimalon delaila limavon delaila lemitrach lachsav lishol be'ir mimocher mizonos. Go figure out where to locate a store that would sell him food. Chamor derabe lemitrach ulemizvan. However, it is not unusual for the driver of the donkey to go look for food and purchase food day by day or night by night. Perhaps the donkey driver is very much aware of this road and where he can find provisions, so it's not such a hassle. In any event, the Braisa allows him to maximize the weight of one day's worth of food so that we minimize the weight on the back of the chamor. Now, what would be, asks Tosfos, Noked hachi vishum de'i shchiach lemitrach lemizmin as afilu bechatzi yom imkein lom meniach chamar mizonos shel kol hayom. Why can't he just on the way stop by midday and get himself lunch? Umeikar dekomer ishchiach lemizvan chamar nami liakiv hani havimotz lememer socher nami liakiv lechamar lios mizono klal shel oso ayom. So the Gemara could have actually said that the socher has the right to be ma'akev the chamar from even one full day's worth of provisions. Then the Gemara concludes that socher lav darki lemizvan lemizvan. It's a real hassle for the renter to try to look up in the local in the local rag, the local phone book, and try to find a place to purchase food on a daily basis. So the Braisa gives a certain leniency, an allowance for the socher that doesn't apply to the chamor. Now, if you'll take a look in Choshen Mishpat, you'll see that there are discussions about minigam makom, that it could be that these dinim have to reflect the minigam makom. Tanur Rabbanan. The second brisa that we have for today, hasocher es hachamor lirkov oleha ish. The agreement was made that a man would ride this rented donkey. Lo sirkav oleha isha. He's not allowed to send his wife riding on the chamor. And why is that so? Rashi says that a woman is heavier on the donkey, and probably the reason for this is that she doesn't really know how to sit properly on the donkey. She doesn't have that much experience. Isha. But with a kal v'chomer, we could say that if the agreement was for a woman to ride the donkey, rochev ala ish, then a man, since he's lighter on the donkey, he can certainly be included in that agreement. Now the Ritva adds that a woman doesn't know how to sit properly on the when she's riding a donkey. What happens, the Ritva asks, if the socher violated this Tanai, this understood agreement, and he lets a woman ride on the donkey. If the donkey dies, or the donkey, somehow collapses and hurts himself due to the fact that it was an Isha who was riding the donkey, would it be a din of Adam Amazik here? Shall we say that insofar as the socher violated the terms of the rental agreement, therefore he becomes a mazik, and he would have to compensate the owner of the donkey for any injuries suffered by the donkey or for the death of the donkey? And the Ritva says no. That in this case, the socher does not have to pay as a mazik, even though he had no authorization to offer a woman as a rider on the donkey, but that's not considered mazik. In other words, we assume that the maskir, had he been approached explicitly, he would have agreed to allow a woman to ride on the donkey. That's the Ritva's position. Now, when it comes to an Isha, for example, if there was an explicit permission given to an Isha to ride the donkey, Bein Gdola, Bein Ktana. Rashi says, Pasak lirkov alea Isha, markiv alea kol Isha shiirtza, Bein shi Gdola, Bein shi Ktana. So you get the impression that we're talking about a heavier woman, a larger woman, or a lighter woman, but if you look at Tosus Isha ben Gdol ben Ktana ben Ish lo Ratzel Shanas ben Kotten ben Gadol Mishum the Gavri Shchiyat Shem Gdol Pshita Dadaita the Gadol Nami Agre Neil. In other words, a large woman, a heavy woman, is a bit less commonplace, and if it wasn't specified in the agreement, then perhaps in the Hamminu we would have said that this would be a violation of the terms of the rental agreement because this woman is unusually large. And Tosus answers no, that there's an implicit condition or understanding, an agreement that even in the case of an unusually large woman, which is somewhat rare, that's also included in the rental agreement. afilu muberes v'afilu menika. Even if she is pregnant, and that adds weight, obviously, to the woman, afilu menika, even if she's taking along a baby. Rashi says, hashta menika amrit muberes miboy, shehi shnei gufim. In the case of menika, she's taking along her baby, that's two human beings. Vavlad kove, the vlad has some weight to it. Amrit tirkav im vladeo is muberes dechad gufu hu miboy. Why'd you have to tell me the case of meuberes? Amra papa. Meuberes vihi menika kamar. What the Tana was saying here was that this woman is both a muberes and a menika at the same time. And since the masker agreed to hire this donkey out to a woman driver, therefore, in the absence of any explicit condition to the contrary, the permission was given to any woman who's driving, and it might include even the case of a woman who's driving the donkey and she's both pregnant and nursing. Omar Abai Shmami Na, this is on the side, this really has to do more with Mekach u'Memkar. Binisa Akarsa Tikla. In other words, when you're buying fish, then if you look at the belly of the fish, and if the belly is very large, you know it's a heavier fish. In other words, since the Brisa told us that if the agreement was on a female rider and it was unspecified, therefore even a larger woman is permitted within the context of that agreement, and the chiddush here is in the case of a pregnant woman, because she has a large belly and therefore apparently she weighs even more than a large woman because she has this fat belly. So Abai says that if we apply this to the case of buying a fish, then the weight of the fish can be determined by the size of the belly. And this is no gear, this is relevant. The Gemara says, which means that what Abai is trying to teach us here is that if a person buys a fish, let's say it's sold by weight, then he has to assume that he's going to pay a lot more for a larger bellied fish. And Rashi says, "Lefi kresa kovda, lemekach memkev imra isa dag shekreso gadol lo tikneu b'mishkal." Rashi says we would discourage the buyer from purchasing a fish that has a large belly because he's going to pay a lot more for that fish. He's going to weigh more. Ela im kein yotzi es meyav, unless he removes the inside, the kishkis of the fish. Okay, this leads us to the Mishnah here on Daf Peyom and Aleph, the first Mishnah on Daf Peyom and Aleph. Hasocheres hapara lachosh bahar. The agreement was that the cow would plow in an area which is very steep and very slippery, and that's the case of the har. V'charesh bebika. However, the renter went ahead and he used the cow to plant in a lower area instead. Im nishbar hakankan potur. Now, what is this kankan? So, if you take a look at Rashi, he writes, kol klei hamachresha lebal habokar uni arav holchim im behemto. Rashi says that all of the parts of the plow itself are owned by the Baal HaBokar. meaning the maskir. So the maskir rents out not just the para, but also the plow. And Narav, he sends, meaning the maskir sends his young people, holchim im behemto, to accompany his animal, ze ochez hadarbon lechaven para the talmel, ze ochez v'ze holech achar machresha umachbid hayosed b'karka shebo abarzel shekorim kultura b'las v'hu kankan de masnisen. So the renter gets not only the cow, but along with the cow he gets the plow with all its kalim. There are two young men, this is how they do the plowing, who come from the family of the maskir, and one of them will guide the cow, and he holds on to a kli which is called a kankan, and then the second young man walks behind the plow and he presses down on a handle, and this kankan, which is up front, which is somehow connected to the actual machresha itself, meaning the blade, that cuts into the turf to the surface level of the karka. Now, what does it mean when it says in the Mishnah, im nishbara kankan potur, meaning the renter, instead of plowing in the mountain, which was part of the agreement, he plows down in the valley. Now, the ground in the valley is considered softer, whereas the ground in the mountain is considered harder. Now, since the maskir agreed to plowing in the mountain, where the terrain is rocky, then he certainly would agree to take a low risk, if you will, by plowing in the valley where the ground is softer. So therefore, if the kankan breaks, you know, this blade that enters into the surface level of the kake breaks, then the socher is not chai for that, because that's not considered that he violated the terms of the agreement. Again, you can discuss a different thing. The Mefarshim Mishnah want to know whether or not the operators here, these two Na'arim, who are hired by the maskir, they might be in violation. They didn't do a proper job. Otherwise, how is it that the plow is broken? So, in any event, it seems that the plow and the Na'arim are all working on one team, and there's, you know, they represent the maskir to try to do the best they could. If, on the other hand, the maskir actually hired these two young men and paid them for their labor, now in such a case, the nar who's in front, he's the one who's liable, because he's the one who's controlling this blade, this kankan, and he's the one who's really the poshea here, and because of his negligence, he has to pay for the damage. In any event, we go on here in the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that babika, if let's say the agreement was to plow in a valley where the ground is soft, the v'charish bahar, and instead the renter went ahead and he plowed in a more rocky area, in nishbar kankan chayav. In this case, the renter is considered a poshea, he violated the terms of agreement, and he pays damages. And that's what Rashi points out over here, shaharim kashim lachrosh asloim sham, it's rocky. So by violating the terms of the rental agreement, he becomes liable for the plow. The Rambam in Hilchos Schiris Perek Daled writes that the socher should be compensated because of the operators of the plow were apparently negligent. I mean, they were also part of this whole deal. In any event, the Mishnah continues and says, Ladush Bekitnis, Kidneys are legumes, and now the rental agreement was for the cow to thresh and plow on legumes. Now, legumes are considered something that are slippery, and what happened in this case, Dosh Bitfua, the socher, violated the terms of agreement. Instead, he threshed grains, and you would say that since the masker agreed in the terms of the agreement to beans, to legumes, which are slippery, then how much more so would he agree to tvua nefa patur if there's some sort of injury to the cow, because the cow slipped and fell, then there's no negligence here on the part of the socher. However, dosh bitfua, in the reverse case, where the agreement was that he thresh on grains, and dosh bikidnia says, instead the renter violated the terms of the agreement, he threshed on kidneys, chayev, he has to pay for any injury to the cow, he has to compensate because it's his negligence here that caused the injury to the cow, because these legumes are very slippery, and there was never an agreement to plow on these slippery legumes. So since the spoken agreement between the maskir and the socher was that the cow would be used for grain, for threshing grain, therefore the owner indicates that he wants grain and nothing else will be acceptable, and therefore the socher has to pay for any injury, any damage to the cow. Now, since according to the Mishnah, the maskir has rights to collect in case the renter violated the terms of the agreement, the Gemara now believes that in the first case of the Mishnah, which was Socher Sapar Lachosh Behar, Vecharash Bibika, then it might be possible for the maskir to theoretically collect compensation even in a situation where the socher did not violate the agreement. Hecha delo shani bei, so there was no deviation on the part of the socher from the terms of the rental agreement. Now the maskir, the owner of the cow, should have no claim for anything damaged, including the kankan. The plow was operated by whom? Well, if it was operated by the relatives, so to speak, of the maskir, the owner, that's one thing. But supposing they were hired workers, shall they be chayv to pay for negligence, for pshia as mazikim, man mishalim? So who's going to pay for the breaking of the kankan? The one who guided the cow was apparently negligent. He didn't guide the cow properly. As a result, this kankan sort of moved away from the line of the telem, and the kankan smashed up against some sort of a stone, and the breakage of the kankan was a result of the pshia of that person. So that worker, because of his pshia, should be paying damages. Omar of Papa, dinokit parasha mishalim. Enochinami, the one who's holding on to the guide, that which guides the plow, he, the handle of the plow, he's the one who has to pay damages. Rav Shisha, Breder of Idi, Omar, he disagrees. He says, dinokit mona mishalim. Now, what's the difference between the one who's holding on to the parasha, which is the handle, and the one who's holding on to the mana, which means the actual plow, or the kankan, as we call it? What is this machlokas all about? Now, on the one hand, you could say that the, as Rav Shisha says it, the one who's holding on to the kankan, he apparently dug it deep into the ground, and it hit up against a rock that was, you know, a strong rock that was rooted deep against the ground. So we understand why Rav Shisha says that the one who was pressing the plow itself into the ground, he should pay for damages. And on the other hand, perhaps we could say that the one who's holding on to the handle, he should pay. That's the shita of Rav Papa. Rashi Hedira Masel Dinokit explains the shita of Rav Papa, and he says, Mardea, hu mishalim shel kivein es hapar yofef al yedei she'ives es hashura shel ma'ane nishbar hakankan. So that there are two factors here that contribute to the damage to the kankan. One is more direct and one is a little bit less direct. The one that's less direct is the guiding of the plow, of the para, in terms of its as we said before, it has to go according to a certain line and a certain furrow, a telem, and he, the parasha, the one who's holding on to the handle, and he's sort of being mechaving the para, he apparently deviated from the right path. And that ultimately led to the destruction, to the damage to the kankan. But on the other hand, there's another participant here, and that's the person holding on to the kankan itself. If he digs it too deeply into the ground, that's what might cause it to hit up against a rock. And the Gemara finally comes to a conclusion. Halach lemaisa v'hilchasa dinokit mana mishalem. And we pass like Rav Shisha, that the one who's holding on to the kankan, he's the direct mazik, and he has to pay. Meaning, even though the nakat parasha was guilty in kind of deviating from the right path, but nevertheless, ultimately, if not for the fact that the nakat mana had dug too deeply into the ground, it wouldn't have hit up against this rock and broken. But the Gemara says, "Iduchta demechazka gundere, then shavayim mishamle." In other words, let's say the terms of the agreement were to plow in the rocky area of the mountains, and if it was well known that there are certain stones that are, you know, that are very dangerous for the plow, then travayim mishalmi, because then in such an area, both of these are equally responsible. In other words, the line of the furrow has to be adhered to very strictly. And because of the fact that the manig, you know, the person who is nakat parsha, deviated from that line, that was ultimately a major contribution to the breaking down of the kankan. So there's pshia on the part of both of them, and therefore both of them will share the damages. And that's what Rashi says, Ida machaski begundri, shoye yadua lehem bahar shemala vonim, vitsunma, vitarshin. Tsunma is a very hard, sharp rock. Is travaya mishalmi, says Rashi, in other words, the cause of the damage can be attributed also to the manik. We're not sure which of the two, and therefore they both pay. If you take a look at Tosus, Dibra Maschil V'i, he quotes Rashi, Davi Sufik, those last two words in Rashi, last few words in Rashi, caught the eye of Tosus, Ein Nira. He says that, according to the Shita of the Chachamim of Sumchas HaMotzim HaChavel of Araya, V'yavi Sufik, then both of them should be Potel. And Nira Li, Dahacha, Shneim Poshu, there was a Pshi on the part of both of them, and therefore, they're both responsible, each one of them individually should be paying for these damages. Now, I would argue that even Rashi agrees to Tosfos, and the word Suffolk here perhaps refers to who was the main contributor. If we don't know who the main contributor was, so we can't point that finger at one of the two, then it's going to fall back on both of them because each one was responsible, as Tosfos points out. So I don't think that there's that much of a distance here between Rashi and Tosfos. Tosfos accuses Rashi of attributing this sugya in the final halacha to Simchus. We don't paskin like Simchus. That instead of Hamotzi Mechavel Varaya and the Chazaka rules out, we should split the money in a case of a suffix. Okay, now the Gemara goes on and says, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Hamocher Par L'Chaver of the Omar Lo, Parazu Nagchanishi, Nashkanishi, Ba'atanishi, Rabtanishi. The seller gave a whole list here and enumerated all sorts of mumim, all sorts of deficiencies in the cow that he's selling to him, and he told him that he's she is a nakhonis, you know, it gores people, a nashkhonis, it bites people, a nakhonis, it kicks people, all these terrible adjectives that are described in the resume. Now, what happened was that out of all these mumim, only one of them turned out to be true. In other words, the seller mentioned all these blemishes, the whole list of, actually four of them are on the list, and only one out of the four turned out to be true. In such a case, usnafo ben amumim, the seller from his part claims that it was listed amongst the blemishes, so that there's no logical reason that justifies the claim of the buyer that he was fooled and he had a mistaken das, because indeed this blemish was declared up front by the seller. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan says Areza Mekatos. And why is this so? What's the mekartos here with regard to a blemish that was explicitly mentioned by the seller? So Rashi says that snofo ben amumim, that the other three blemishes were not so. In other words, he basically added a whole list of blemishes that are not in any way genuine reflection of this particular cow. The purchaser became aware of the fact that all the other mumim don't exist, because he thought that the whole list was a sheker, and the only reason why the mocher mentioned all these blemishes is to avoid any tarumas, any complaint against him. And here, in that case, since the lokeach really didn't believe the mocher, even as far as any of the blemishes, because at least in three out of four he was lying, therefore it's a mekatos. Rashi says, Adaiti the hachalos of it. He didn't purchase it with that mindset. But, however, mum ze umum acher, if the mocher only mentioned two blemishes, one and then another, in other words, he mentioned one particular mum, pirish lo shemo sa mum, he explicitly mentioned the mum, v'yomalo mum ze v'od mum, and he said there's another mum, which is undefined, unspecified, or many other mumim, ein ze mekatos. In other words, since that one mum was mentioned explicitly was an existing mum, then once the buyer understood that there was at least a minimum of one mum, he should have done his due diligence to check out and see if, as the mocher had said, there were other mumim. And ein ze mekatos, which means that he understood that unless he investigates, he shouldn't buy it. If he doesn't investigate, then he's accepting the cow as is, even though it possesses another mum, and the mechira stands valid. Ein ze mekatos. And Rashi says, Hoyelo livduk. Tanya Rami Yochi, we have a brisa to support this statement of Rabbi Yochanan, Moche Shivcha lechavero vi Omar lo. The seller selling a Shivcha Knainis to the buyer says, Shivcha zu shota hi, nichpesi, mishua memesi, vayeva mum echad. He gives a whole long list of terrible mumim, blemishes in this woman. She is a crazy woman. She is boring as anything. She's nichfes. She suffers from different diseases, maybe epilepsy. And then out of this whole list that he enumerated, she had in fact only one blemish, snafu bein hamumim. In other words, the seller sort of pushed it in, you know, he snuck it in this whole long list, areza mekatos, because the buyer never guessed that there would be any mum. He thought that just the seller was covering his bases. Is einze, but if it's mum ze umum acher, if he mentions one particular blemish that does exist, and he says there are other blemishes, then einze mekatos. So this is really a direct, explicit support for Rabbi Yochanan. Amar le Rav Acha berei de Rav le Rav Ashi, hayu ba kol amumim alalu mahu. What if the seller gave an entire enumerated list of all the mumim, and in fact, all the mumim exist? In other words, this was not some sort of a cover, you know, of a fig leaf covering in order to protect himself from taromas, but he really was honest about it and gave a direct description of the resume of this Shivcha Knainis. In other words, it's very similar to the first case that we spoke about, but in the first case the blemishes did not exist. In this case, the blemishes did exist. Amalei Rav Amalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, Hachi Amrina Mishmei De Rava Hayu Bakol Amumim Alalu Einze Mekatos. If all the enumerated blemishes actually exist, then the buyer was not fooled in any way. He had to understand that this is an accurate description of the Shivcha Knainis, and he accepted her as such. Once the seller detailed all of the blemishes, all the drawbacks of this woman, and they indeed exist, then when the buyer finds that, you know, one of them in particular he can't tolerate, he finds it repulsive, he wants to get out of this deal, he doesn't have the right to do so because he was notified up front that she has this blemish, and the seller did not in anyone beef it up or lie to him about this long list of blemishes. They were true, and therefore he cannot claim mekatos. Let's see if we can just learn the next Mishnah here on the same daf peyom and aleph. Hasocher sachamor lahavi oleho chitim. The agreement was made for chitim, for this donkey. That's what it's transporting, is chitim. And that was the explicit agreement between the socher and the maskir. Vehevi oleh sa'orin. And instead, the socher transported barley, which is a lot lighter than chitim. And therefore, you would say in this case that he should not be chayev, because yesh l'chal masayim mona, and yet the Mishnah says chayev, that the socher has to pay in terms of a violation of the rental agreement. So the rental agreement was for the transportation of chitim. The socher violated that agreement, and instead he transported siorim, and yet he's chayev. So the question is, why is he chayev for a load that is lighter than the one that they agreed upon? And apparently, there is some concept here called lesech. We have to figure out what that means. But in any event, the Mishnah goes on to say tvua, if the agreement was that the chamor would transport tvuah ve'vi'oleha teven, and instead he brought straw, which is again lighter, chayv, once again he's chayv for any injury, he has to compensate as a violator of the agreement of the schir, smivnesha nefach, kosher b'masoi. The Mishnah now reveals why carrying a lighter load is considered a pshia and a violation and a chiyuv mazik. The answer is something called lesech, which in the language of the Mishnah is called nefach kosher b'masoi. So what it means is that there's something called bulk. So there are always two elements in terms of what the chamor could tolerate. There's on the one end the weight, and there's also the bulk. And the bulk adds an extra burden to the chamor that goes above and beyond the weight of the actual barley or the wheat. So there's a lesech and nofach in the case of barley, and that really wears down the chamor. The bulkiness of this lesach is, you know, makes up for the fact that in pure weight it's lighter. Now Rashi goes through an entire calculation here about this lesach. We don't have time for that today, but in Mirtz Hashem, when we get back to this Mishnah next year, we'll get into this Rashi in great detail. So for now, we'll stop here.